This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Monday, 27th of December, 2021, and we seem to have had quite the quote-unquote Santa rally last week as we finished off that week on a high note. If you look at the S&P 500 in the US, for example, you can see it back towards those highs. Effectively, on the future at least, it was the highest close for the cycle, even if it didn't get there intraday. And you can see our various equity theme baskets there on slide two, where I've sorted on the month-to-date performance. A bit notable, I mean, you know, we've noted a lot of the different divergences, especially the median stock not doing that well in recent months. Some rather alarming signs of a very narrow market, a lack of market breadth there. But the mega caps actually underperforming that those very sectors that were keeping the broader market higher. So if you look at the NASDAQ 100, we're a bit divergent. And Stein Jakobsen, great to have you on the call today. And we had our internal meeting a bit earlier, and you were talking about, you know, if you told me that our inflation call was going to be right this year, which it has been, but that the broader market would do this well year to date. You can see those figures on slide three for the various geographies. Very surprised by that result. So what do you attribute that to, and how does it leave you, mood on the at least the equity market going into the new year?
Seems pretty clear that we're trading, still trading the covenant, spread, the vaccine levels and the like. So it's basically the main drivers. As we get reports that the new mutation is weaker and it's creating less hospitalization, it's clear that the market is saying that as a bullish sign. So it's kind of interesting because by the same token, that will mean that we have less fiscal support and overall, intervention into the economy. But, thank God for our politicians who are panicking globally on this issue, despite the fact that evidence seems to indicate that clearly that the impact is less. But it's been a strange year. It's been a very strange year. Had you told me that we're going to have a 6% headline CPI and then a stock market that is up 27-28% in the S&P terms, I would have been surprised. But it's probably goes to the people who says that there are no alternative. Clearly, bonds is having one of the worst years ever. So the relative performance between bonds and equity is pretty clear. Commodities have had an overall good year. And the only thing outstanding going into Q1, of course, is this, let's call it a mini energy crisis that we're dealing with as we exit the year.
Yeah, but then on the interest rate front, you indicated, as you said, one of the worst bond market performances in a long time. And yet, if you look out at, let's just say, the U.S. 10-year, for example, yield, it's still sort of capped, to say the least, the yield down around 1.5%. And not headed higher. So despite those repricing of the Fed that we've sort of been steadily seeing a drumbeat of in recent months as these inflation figures have marched higher, that just seems to be the stubborn view that they're simply not going to be achieving liftoff at the longer end of the curve. And I guess that has supported equities at the margins, the fact that those real rates for the longer end have stayed quite low.
Yeah, and you have to remember how the year evolved. We came into Q1 last year with a big fright on the Delta variant, and 10-year traded 137 in the 10-year futures, and now trading 130 handle. So it's down a good 7%. So we have moved a long way, but we have not, as you indicate, relative to inflation, seen the impact yet. That I think what's been holding the bond market back is the same, as I said before. It's simply the fact that we are at a constant alertness in terms of the potential slowdown of the economy based on a close down. And again, overall, the COVID-19 impacts and its mutation. So it's not one for the books in terms of it makes a lot of sense. It's one for the books of total confusion. I think by August of this year, most people were willing to write off that we will see COVID again. And here we are with a number of countries in close total lockdown and the politician, as per usual, in total panic.
Right. And it will be really key on the Omicron front. I'm watching especially the UK data there, where we've seen the very slightest uptick in the most recent hospitalization data. But it feels like we're going to need to see another week or 2 weeks of data, and then we'll have a firmer view of that getting confirmed, this idea that it is a milder variant. But as we constantly have to have the caveat, we don't simply don't know what's going to happen with this virus. But on the natural gas front and the European power front, you mentioned that briefly. Big changes afoot over the last week. We saw another tremendous spike in energy and forward power prices last week, part of that linked to the shutdown in some French nuclear plants. But we've seen as well a news item emerging that there's a veritable flotilla of U.S. LNG cargoes headed towards Europe. I don't know to what degree that has been the icebreaker here, or the thing that sort of tipped the market back the other way, or to what degree there's news that Russia will get to negotiate now in January with both the U.S. and separately with NATO on whether or not there can be some sort of agreement struck on, you know, keeping these commitments to Ukraine and certainly NATO out of Ukraine, whether they can get that deal sealed before eventually upping their natural gas shipments. But in any case, you can see the price developments on slide 4. Where we saw that tremendous further spike again to something like 170 plus, 175 plus even, and we're back to 102. But you see from the perspective there, we need to see a further halving or more of prices to get back to anything resembling normalcy. I don't know if you got any thoughts on this, Stain, to what degree this concerns you, this whole standoff over Ukraine, etc., as we look forward to the rest of this winter.
No, of course it concerns me, but it seems like that this token of a peace offering in citation marks, withdrawing 10,000 troops, indicates that Russia wants to negotiate and they want to create and re-emphasize this Ukraine is part of Russia, part. And if NATO accepts that, I think there is, you know, some truce coming through on that sense. But it's a big geopolitical risk, a game that is not for us to return to it on. I think the energy situation is far more severe. As far as we know, the German regulators is not willing to open up the Nord Stream before sometimes in at the end of Q2, sorry, at the earliest. And considering the cold weather we've had, at least in the northern part of Europe, it indicates to me that yes, the LNG flotilla is coming from the US and that will close the gap right now, but the gap is still there in January and February. So I think the whole energy situation remains very contagious and it remains very underestimated by the market in terms of its impact on medium-term inflation for sure.
Yeah, and especially in the longer term, simply from the underinvestment perspective we've talked about before, to secure longer term supplies that are not going to be replaceable with alternative energy on anything resembling the former scale of our energy economy in the coming at least handful of years. A separate issue in Eastern Europe, not really linked at all to Russia, is the ongoing spat, and it's not really a spat, it's getting pretty serious, the EU versus Poland on its the independence of the Polish judiciary, to what degree that is the case. There's been a so-called infringement procedure forwarded on the constitutional court ruling in Poland, and there's something like a two-month time frame for that. Poland has to respond, and then Europe has 2 months after that to respond to that. All this linked to and holding up EU recovery, so fiscal package recovery funds to Poland, and I must say not particularly helpful, I think, for the diplomatic temperature that you have the Polish President Kaczynski saying he doesn't want to be, I don't have the exact wording here in front of me, but he doesn't want to see Poland subject to something that's resembling Germany taking over the EU as a sort of Fourth Reich, that language inserted in there. What are your concerns? Does the Eastern European front concern you the most when looking forward for Europe, or is it just still the broader playing field for Europe? Energy, the United States of Europe, whether to what degree they need to more fiscally integrate going forward from here, Stain. I know you have some concerns around Europe as we look ahead.
Yes, so my concerns is strategic, that we are deficient in energy and deficient in military, and subsequently also we are very weak in terms of decision making, and that's exactly what goes on in terms of Poland. it's kind of interesting that the ability of the EU and EU Commission to actually penalize Poland is very, very, very weak. And ultimately, it is to take away some of the support that they get through the different EU agencies. But it's very weak, and it's very prolonged in terms of its timeline. So it's difficult to navigate. But it's pretty clear that, and of course, most of all, the Council of Ministers is based on a veto. And here you have Poland and Hungary staying together and making sure that there's not a unanimous decision going on in these positions, which just tells you how flawed the whole decision making is in the EU. And I know for a fact that two things right now is going on in the EU. One is to move to a majority rule instead of unanimous. And the second part, of course, is that again, now the Commission needs to discuss whether it can issue new taxes on behalf of the EU, meaning that you and I, John, will be taxed not only from our local government, but also from the EU. And if they allow that to open, it's a little bit like what I keep reminding you guys in my team about. It is when Denmark introduced VAT in the 1960s, it was supposed to be temporary. And now it's 25% of the volume of sales. So it's scary. Europe is really, being weakened, and it's being weakened from within, and it is definitely the West versus the East flank that is hurting. And you see that also in economic data. You see right now that the Czech, the Hungarian, the Polish central bank is dealing with inflation rate above 10% or close to 10% and close to Czech. And they have reacted, most of them, of course, Turkey being, Hungary and Poland and Czech with hikes in interest rates and very aggressive hikes. And this is, not too far away from Frankfurt, where the ECB continues to talk about that we'll be at less than 2% inflation at the end of the year. So wherever you look in economic data, in political decision making, in the way that they want to conduct the taxonomy of Europe, I'm seriously concerned about Europe. Europe is at a breaking point, and I think what really will break it is this energy crisis and underinvestment. Imagine if we don't see any natural gas flowing from Russia before Q3 of this year. It's going to be a disaster, in particular for Germany and others who've made themselves wholly dependent on renewable energy. So yes, Europe is, I've never said this before, but Europe is really one of my major concerns for 22.
And interesting, a couple of points there. So you're seeing some credibility, at least in FX, from the central bank reactions there in Central and Eastern Europe, certainly, especially from the Czech Corona, where the Czech central bank has been the most aggressive. We've dropped below an interesting area there, and you're getting some pretty decent carry now on top of that, several hundred basis points. And Poland as well, even with these threats, has managed to sort of come back lower, so avoiding new lows against the euro. If you look at euro dollar, though, it's very interesting to note this month of December has been incredibly indecisive. We're traded the entire month within the final five trading days range of November. Looks a bit spring-loaded to me to react one way or the other, either significant breakout because something negative happens to the dollar in the near. We do have signs on the fiscal front that we're not going to get something. Certainly we didn't get it by Christmas because Joe Manchin has made himself precious and dear in terms of getting a deal through Congress on the Build Back Better plan. He says he had to rewrite the whole thing. Likely means it's going to be a lot smaller, and the fiscal impulse will be therefore a lot smaller as well. But you can see on slide 6, the various FX trends, trend readings are very soft here as we're seeing a lot of mean reversion and indecision as indicated on that Eurodollar chart. Any thoughts on fiscal? I mean, regardless, even if we did get the full, what was sort of on the table with this Build Back Better plan ahead of Christmas, staying to the run rate of that, it's just peanuts compared to all the crazy fiscal excess and the stimulus checks that we saw during the pandemic time frame. We need to see something else coming on board to keep the U.S. economy heat or hot. And that would be, for example, credit or consumer to savings. But how do you look at the U.S. Economy or just the U.S. outlook as we come into New Year? Are you concerned about the fiscal, so-called fiscal cliff?
I'm concerned about the fiscal drag, which in nominal terms is 4% and probably in practical terms is somewhere between 3 and 4%. Of course, we can, and I think to some extent they will be able to do a scaled down version of the Build Back Better plan in Q1. At least that's what they will be hoping for. But as you say, it will still come up short in terms of being that fiscal impulse. But John, to be honest, that's also why the market is up. The market is looking through the inflation and saying, well, there's enough slowdown in the growth trajectory here to vindicate that we continue to have a risk on, because inflation may be high in short and medium term, but ultimately this drag that comes from the fiscal side will evaporate. I tend to think that that will be, if this camp is right and the slowdown is significant, then there will be some sort of agreement across the aisle in terms of supporting the US economy. Because at the end of the day, the only thing left for the politician today is to get these equity markets stable and higher. It seems to be the main driver of politics. We certainly see a lot of changes to politics as soon as there's some nervousness in the market. So I think it's the other way around, John. I think the stock market will dictate when we have fiscal impulses coming through. And if there is enough negative fiscal impulse, sorry, n enough negative stock market reaction in Q1 or Q2, then I think there will be fiscal. I don't think that it's the other way around anymore.
And probably too many eyes on the Fed, and the Fed, that all they can do, given where
Fed
inflation.
is irrelevant. Fed,
Exactly,
it
yeah.
is all about 2022 will be about the energy crisis and that fallout from that, in terms of, is there a need for fiscal support to the low income to mitigate some of these energy costs rising? Certainly in Europe, that is very likely to be the case. In terms of Federal Reserve, it doesn't really matter what Fed does. Fed has to talk hawkish, will talk hawkish. Whether they deliver or not, of course, is the outstanding issue. And as you know, that is our 70% probability that Fed will need to talk hawkish. We come into the year with 2 to 3 hikes being priced in. And in the benign environment, we see these 2 to 3 hikes being taken away by the market as this fiscal drag becomes an overhang. And then the market is in a almost perfect situation of having contained interest rate to leverage from. I think that's the benign scenario. The less benign, the 30% probability that we operate for 22, is that the energy crisis, of course, in itself makes sure that inflation stays for longer, and staying longer means the Fed actually has to deliver. So I think everything in 22 in terms of Fed will hang on whether they actually deliver the first hike around March, April. If they don't, the market will rally from that point onwards.
All right. Going to be an interesting setup as we look at the last couple of days of the year. You can see the calendar, which is rather boring for the rest of this year, on slide 7. Very little to highlight there. And yeah, I think let's see what happens these last 4 trading days, at least for those markets that aren't closed on December 31st, for the rest of the year. Thanks for joining, Stane, and we'll be back tomorrow with the Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call, or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.